podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the William Hill Punt Podcast ahead of this weekend's footballing action. My name is Dave Kellner. I'm going to guide you through the televised Premier League games alongside Andy Excel and Derek McGovern in a few moments' time. We'll also hear from the Daily Mail's Laurie Whitwell, who was at Wales for the unveiling of Ryan Giggs as Wales boss. We'll talk about that. And we'll talk about the transfer market and the ongoing Alexis Sanchez saga later on the podcast. We've also got Pete Farris, Gav Puchalski and Al Ross giving their best bets in the Football League. We'll have a bet in Europe coming your way as well. But right now, Derek and Andy on the line to join me to give us the winners ahead of the Premier League this weekend. First of all, a good morning, a warm welcome to Derek McGovern. Derek, how are you doing, sir?
Very, very well, yes. Still counting my winnings after last week. Winning that over 3-1, I think you'll find Bournemouth.
I said off-air to you, Derek, that for once on this podcast, we can crow about winners. That's the first time this season, I think, because I managed to have Liverpool last week as well. Who?
Oh, brilliant. So we must have got the treble. What did Andy go for?
We were close to the treble, Derek. Andy, can you remind us of your bet?
Yes, all right. Keep coming. Yes, I went first and got Burnley, and you two would have taken them as well, be honest.
Burnley? What? Come on, no one would have gone for that. That was a terrible, terrible bet, Burnley.
Let's get stuck into this week then, chaps, and hopefully we'll have some success on the programme this week. And we start with Brighton versus Chelsea, which is a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. 5-1 for the home side, Brighton. The draw 14-5 with Chelsea. At 4-7, if you fancy Chelsea to win both halves, that was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 4-1. And Alvaro Morata and Eden Hazard both to score was 18-5. That's been enhanced to 9-2. I think with that enhancement, Andy, William Hill sort of taunting the Chelsea betting public because Morata and Hazard have both been out of form. I mean, Chelsea ended a run of three consecutive 0-0 draws with an unconvincing display against Norwich on Wednesday night. They seem to be so one-dimensional at the moment. And you looked, or I think you were ahead of your time in saying that Chelsea weren't the team of old, Andy.
No, I've had that feeling for a long time that something's not right in the camp, and Conte keeps almost baiting these rumours about him leaving at the end of the season. So things don't appear to be right, and I think there's a lot of players in the team that are either looking at the World Cup or Champions League, and they're really not bothered that much with the domestic stuff. So, you know, the number of draws they're having, you'd be tempted to look at a draw here again, because Brighton don't score many. Chelsea don't seem to be able to score at the moment. They're fine from the penalty spot, so maybe they just sort of start throwing themselves down in the box. Oh, no, they're already doing that. So, you know, I think this could well end up a draw again, 0-0 or 1-1.
14-5 for the draw in the game. This is actually only the 10th meeting between these two sides. Chelsea have won the last seven in all competitions. Brighton have just got one win from their last 12 in the Premier League. They've actually failed to score in eight of those fixtures as well. That has been the real issue, Derek, for Brighton. Not got a bona fide goal scorer. They have only lost one of their last 10 in the Premier League at the Amex, though. They've drawn six of those, so maybe Andy on the right line's looking at this to end in a stalemate.
I think Brighton were playing a little bit better a few weeks ago than they are now, though. Results seem to be taking a downturn. And you're right, the last 11 Premier League games I was looking before we came on it, they've failed to score in eight of those. Chelsea in their last six Premier League games have kept a clean sheet in five of them. Chelsea at evens or just under evens to keep a clean sheet against Brighton. Now, that is not the bet of the day. I'm not going to kid you. It's the bet of all time. The bet of all time. They're 4-7 to win. And, you know, you might think, well, they're not playing well enough to be worth that, worth the bet there. When you compare that later down the coupon to Liverpool at Swansea, not a hill of beans the difference between those two kind of fixes, the two tests. Liverpool are 3-10. Chelsea 4-7. I mean, you know, it's almost buying money, isn't it, some would say, which is in recent years about the only thing Chelsea haven't bought, just as well, because he probably paid well over the odds for it, by the way. I think Chelsea at 4-7 will win, but I've never seen, since the turn of the year, a better bet than Chelsea at 19-20 with Hills to keep a clean sheet at Brighton. That will happen.
Chelsea to win to nil is 11-8. Go on, Andy.
Seeing as I've taken some grief already, didn't Derek put Brighton up to the draw 0-0 last week? And how long did that last? About 90 seconds, I think.
I did notice that.
We got a tweet. We got a tweet about that, Derek. Actually, I think it lasted 3.5 minutes. That bet. The 0-0 draw in this game, by the way, that's 8-1. If you think this might end 0-0, and it's a curious run of fixtures, this, isn't it? This weekend, because the reverse fixtures were all part of the Boxing Day set. So we've got like a quick turnaround in these fixtures, and the reverse fixture for this one ended 2-0 to Chelsea, and that's available at 6-1 if you think Chelsea are going to win this one 2-0 away from home. They beat them at Stamford Bridge late last year. Manchester City take on Newcastle this weekend. This one's televised, 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. City are 1-8 to win this game. The draw 15-2, Newcastle 18-1. Sergio Aguero to score and Manchester City to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0. That was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Aguero has an absolutely sensational record against Newcastle. He's got 11 goals against them in the Premier League. Only two players have got a better record in the Premier League against Newcastle. Michael Owen's got 13. Wayne Rooney's got 15. But Aguero averages a goal or an assist every 31 minutes against Brighton at the Etihad. That one's for you, by the way, Derek.
Yeah.
So this looks like, to me, it could be the highest recorded win this season in the Premier League for a side, Derek. I expect City to absolutely annihilate Newcastle.
Well, I'm actually thinking, I'm looking for the bet, you know, on the William Hill, your bet thing. I'm looking for a price for bigger than Arbroath v Bonacord. Remember that? Well, game 36-0 for Arbroath. I'm seeing the City can score more than that. I went against City last week at Liverpool because I thought they'd gone off the ball. I'd seen them a few times and I thought, there's something not quite right there. They're still going to walk the league, but they weren't impressing me that much. And okay, they were 4-1 down at Anfield last week, but for a time there, Jesus, they were sensational, City. They really were. I know how good they are, but for a spell of about 20 minutes, I thought, they're better than I thought. Newcastle are in the Premier League on sufferance. They've got a championship side. I don't think there's a player in their whole squad you'd say would walk into any side. So it's remarkable that they're not already doomed. Mm. A remarkable job by Rafa Benitez. Yeah, this is a cakewalk for them. A few weeks ago, Rafa got all kinds of stick for parking the bus. Didn't even come out of their own half against City. And I applauded it, really, because I didn't think there was any other option for them. They only got beat 1-0. He'll do the same again, but it's at City's ground. Their confidence has gone, Newcastle. There's all kinds of gloom about the club with the takeover failing as well. Man City minus 3 goals is 2-1. So they've got to win by 4 goals or more. They'll probably have covered that by half-time.
I must admit that stood out to me, that 2-1 Man City minus 3 in the game. As one unbeaten record ends, Andy, 31-game unbeaten record in the Premier League ended by Liverpool, another one starts because City are unbeaten in 20 Premier League matches against Newcastle. They've won 17 of those, drawn 3. They've scored at least 4 in their last 4 home Premier League games against Newcastle as well, getting 19 in total. This is one, from a bookmaking perspective, Andy, you just write off, don't you? You admit you're going to take the loss on this.
Pretty much, yeah. Either that or you get the prayer mat out and hope that something happens. But I must You were talking at the beginning about that enhanced offer for Aguero, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0. I'm disowning my colleagues on that one. I think that's a great offer, and I think people should get tucked in, basically, because he does score, he will score. They're looking to bounce back. They're probably angry after last week as well, and they want to get back on track.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a dream fixture for them, the next one they want. And they almost couldn't handpick it, maybe Swansea. But, they'll just hose up, and I'd be interested in that offer.
Yeah, that's Aguero to score, City to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0. I'm not quite sure that goes far enough, but 7-2 does look an attractive price on one of those enhancements on the William Hill website and on the app.
Espanyol will probably feel like they're walking on air after being the first team since last August to beat Barcelona in the Copa del Rey the other day. For all of that was just the first leg of a cup tie, and they face a Sevilla side who haven't won a game in the league in their last five. Now, historically, this is a fixture where home advantage plays a huge part. The home side has won seven of the last eight meetings between these two teams. Now, the exception was a draw, and that was when they last met in August. Now, despite the fact that Espanyol are lower in La Liga compared to Sevilla at the current moment, they are much higher in the form table, 10th when you take into account the form of just the last five matches. Now, throwing the fact that the visitors have only won once in the league away from home since mid-September, and the 13-8 on offer about Espanyol starts to look like some very decent value indeed.
Now we move on to Sunday's games. We've got Southampton versus Spurs first up. This is a 4 p.m. or one game on Sunday, one on Monday. 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday, this one. Southampton 9-2 to win the game. The draw 14-5 with Spurs in the betting 8-13. Harry Kane and Dele Alli both to score was 18-5. That's been enhanced to 9-2. Harry Kane to score and Spurs to win 1-0, 2-0 or 2-1. That was 19-5. That's been enhanced to 9-2. Mauricio Pochettino has a decent record at St Mary's since leaving to take up his position at Spurs. He's picked up 7 points from a possible 9 going back there with Tottenham, and they hammered them in the reverse fixture at the end of December, 5-2. And Harry Kane, they've got a man who's clearly in form, Andy. He's just been sensational. 4 in his last 2. Scored a hat-trick in that game at Wembley I just mentioned. And this season, he's had 130 shots in the Premier League. That's 42 more than any other player. Not shot-shy, Andy, and certainly not goal-shy, Harry Kane. Player of the season so far, for my money.
Yeah, he's got to be up there. He's got to be in the reckoning. Kevin De Bruyne would have an argument as well. Tottenham are arguably, with Liverpool at the moment, the team in the best form, and Kane's in the best form as well. They hammered them at Tottenham, so why wouldn't they hammer him here? And I think they probably will. I think 8-13 is a pretty good price, to be honest.
Yeah, I do actually. I like the handicap markets here as well with Spurs.
Yeah, I can't see any reason why they won't win. There's another one, on the Akers this week, we'll be hoping, but not expecting. Tottenham's a win for me.
If you fancy Spurs minus one, that's available at 13-8. Spurs minus two is available at 9-2. Have you got more pressing issues there, Derek?
No. It's probably debtors on the phone. I've ignored them. That's what I normally do.
If you're looking for a Southampton goal scorer, by the way, James Ward-Prowse is 19-5 to score any time. He's got each of Southampton's last three in all competitions now, one versus Fulham and two versus Watford. Prior to this spell, he'd gone 25 games without a goal at Ward-Prowse, so he's struck a little bit of form here. 8-13 Spurs, Derek, is that attracting you or not?
Well, I can understand why people would go for it, but I've got a different viewpoint on this game. That game you're talking about, the Boxing Day game, which was live on telly, Spurs against Southampton. Spurs won easily 5-2, as you say. And Southampton, a lot of the players got a lot of stick from the TV pundits afterwards for not giving 100% for the manager. And arguably they didn't. But I still thought they gave a good account of themselves. I'm probably in a very small minority there. But I liked what I saw from Southampton that day. They looked a bag of tricks going forward. And it's interesting, that apart from that game, they played some of the big clubs and give them a good game. Southampton 1-1 against Arsenal, 0-0 against Man United. They only got beat 2-1 at Man City. you know, they're not getting a shellacking from any side, apart from that Tottenham game, which, if you look at the results since, you could argue was a bit of a blip. I'm going for the opposite point of view here.
Okay.
I think Southampton are in with a shout here, especially coming up against their old manager as well. Maybe, you know, maybe motivational player part. But I'm going to go for them with a goal start. I think the 6-5 with a goal start here, Southampton. I like that look at that. I think, you know, I'm always ready to oppose Southampton because they're always too short in the betting. I would argue for the first time in about 11 seasons, it may be overpriced here.
Southampton draw no bet, by the way. That's 11-4 if you do think Southampton are in with a shot, but you want the draw on your side, I suppose, in that game as well. Southampton 11-4, draw no bet. And we finished the weekend with Swansea versus Liverpool. Monday night, this one, 8 p.m. Swansea 17-2 to win it. The draw 9-2 with Liverpool 100-30 on. The enhanced odds, Jordan Ayew to score and Swansea to win, was 16-1. That's been enhanced to 25-1. And Mohamed Salah to score and Liverpool to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0. That was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. David, we briefly mentioned the game against Manchester City last Sunday. Let's talk about Liverpool's performance in that match, because they were simply sensational, pressed high up the field. And I thought it was interesting that after the match, Jurgen Klopp, who doesn't often heap much praise on his players in terms of their pressing because he expects that, talked about how controlled and how well they pressed in that match with his gegenpress that he employed at Mainz and Borussia Dortmund as well. And Andrew Robertson epitomised that, Derek, in that match. As a Liverpool fan, it must have warmed your heart, that performance.
It was fantastic. It was just so entertaining, the game, even when he went 4-1 up. As a Liverpool fan, and I haven't watched him closely for years, I was still biting my fingernails. This is ridiculous, 4-1 up at Anfield. Andrew Robertson had a blinder. He was amazing, and it makes you wonder. You know, I'm still not a committed Klopp fan. I still have my doubts about him, even after last week. And Andrew Robertson is one of the reasons. He's only just recently come into the team. Alberto Moreno was preferred to him, the same Alberto Moreno that every Klopp fan has wanted rid of over the last two seasons. I still can't understand that, just as I can't understand why he hasn't moved in the transfer market to get a keeper. It took him 6 months to get a decent centre-half. You know, these are definite minus points against Klopp. But going forward, they're absolutely incredible. It takes me back to the days of Barnsley, Beardsley, and Rush and Aldridge and so on. And you know, in the late 80s, they were sensational then. They're arguably even more entertaining now. And what you say about that pressing is right. City are there to be pressed, without a question. They insist on playing the ball out at the back. And if you are going to get at them, that's the way. But you've got to have players who, once they've pressed and got the ball, can do something with it. Because it's tiring, all that pressing. And Liverpool have got those players, and they showed it last week. I'm not sure that kind of setup's going to suit every team, but it certainly suits Liverpool. They were great, yeah. It was one of the best matches I've seen in a long, long time, that one. This is a bit different, isn't it, Swansea? Going down to Swansea. It's a game Liverpool should win. If they play anyway halfway as good as they did against City, they'll win it. But they still can't be trusted. I can't back a team at 3-10 that I still got doubts about, that I still can't trust. It's absolute madness. They made it Swansea at Anfield a few weeks ago, but that was expected. But under this new manager, Swansea, they're getting their act together a little bit, Carlos Carvalho. I don't quite know what their identity is. I mean, they used to keep the ball, and then he'd keep it some more until someone, usually Jordan Ayew, misplaced the pass. But now, I don't know. I don't know what to expect from him. I suppose that's good if you're coming up against a team like Liverpool. Maybe they don't know what to expect either. I'm trying to find some way of having a bet in this game, because Liverpool could go to town. You know, they could win this 5-0 by half-time, like they did against Brighton a few weeks ago. They went to Brighton and mulled them. That could happen, but it might not. And I'm not prepared to back 3-2. I'm sorry, I'm not having that. So Swansea at 17-2, it's arguably the biggest price I've ever seen for a home team in the Premier League. I can't remember anyone being bigger than that. In fact, it's probably got to be, hasn't it? But I'm still going to go for them on the handicap. The 5-6 with a 2-goal start. Case of all, after the Lord Mayor's show for Liverpool as well, maybe. All the hype they've had after that City game. This is not the kind of fixture you want after that. I'm going to go for Swansea with a 2-goal start.
That's a possibility, I suppose, that they might have a bit of a letdown after that game against City. They did give Swansea a shellacking in the reverse fixture, won that 5-0. Roberto Firmino scored twice in that game. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain also got one. And such is Liverpool's firepower at the moment, they've scored at least twice in each of their last six Premier League away games. If they score twice in this game, Andy, they will win because Swansea don't have that sort of power up front.
No, I'd agree with that. And a couple of things come immediately to mind when talking about last week's game and then this week's. What do you think Jose Mourinho thought watching that game last week?
Yeah.
I think he thought...
horrified, wasn't he?
How can you have a Premier League game with seven goals in it? That's what Mourinho probably thought.
Yeah. It's a hockey game. It's a hockey game.
And then when you're talking about Liverpool's goalkeeper, they're absolutely right. I think I'm going to make the same point about Arsenal's as well, Petr Cech. I'd hold him responsible for both last week, and nobody ever talks about it. Mm. Both teams, what are they doing? Go get a goalkeeper. It's not that there's none out there. Mm. I think there's one at Stoke that would be quite happy to look for the escape door.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But yeah, you know, when you look at this game, for me as a betting medium, if you're looking at it from a professional point of view, as it were, I just don't want to get involved because, like Derek says, you're uncertain about quite where Swansea are, and you're a bit uncertain about Liverpool in general, and then after the Lord Mayor show as well. That's happened before. Could it happen again? So looking at it from a business point of view, this could be the last leg of a very scary TV fourfold for us, with Chelsea, Man City, Tottenham, and then Liverpool on the Monday. Mm. So if the first three have come in, expect that price to collapse on Monday. You might even get bigger Swansea on Monday.
17-2 Swansea to win that game. What's your gut feeling now recording this on Thursday then, Andy, in terms of a bet?
In terms of a bet in that game?
Yeah.
I don't have a gut feeling, if I'm honest. I probably lean towards where Derek is with Swansea plus two. That's not the worst I've heard.
Okay, chaps, let's talk naps then. After a modicum, we were papering over the cracks to a certain extent last week. Hopefully we can continue in the same vein. Derek, do you want to go first this week?
Yeah, I'm allowed at having gone for a 3-1 plus poke last week and almost got one up the previous week. I'm going to play a little bit safer here. I'm tempted by West Brom 11-4 at Everton because I think Everton are so beatable. But I'm going to play safe and go Chelsea to keep a clean sheet at Brighton because that is... It will happen. In fact, I'm going to demand paying out now, even before kickoff. It's such a short thing. 19-20, Chelsea to keep a clean sheet at Brighton.
Okay. Go on, Andy, give us your best bet.
You know what? I'm going into Derek's desperation mode from last week, but I don't think it is desperate. I'm going to go back to that offer, that Man City to win 2-3, 4-0 and Aguero to score. I think that's all right, and I think I'll take a chance on that at 7-2.
Okay, I'm going to go with Crystal Palace plus one away from home against Arsenal. Arsenal are in disarray at the moment, aren't they, Andy?
You lot are just trying to upset me.
7-5.
The horrible thing is you're telling the truth.
7-5 for Arsenal plus one. I mean, hopefully the transfer window is going to work out for Arsenal. There's rumours that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is going to go to Arsenal. They might get Mkhitaryan as a make weight in that Sanchez deal as well, so might not work out too badly, I suppose, Andy.
Yeah, we're trying to sign a bloke called Malcolm as well, apparently, and that's his actual name. He's a Brazilian from Bordeaux, so he's probably the long-term replacement. They're looking for Sanchez because he's a 20, I think. So yeah, I mean, the transfer window can't close quick enough because there might be people throwing themselves out of it. I'm getting pretty desperate about Arsenal and we need to see some changes there.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, joining myself and Derek on the line on this edition of the podcast, it's the FWA's Laurie Whitwell from the Daily Mail. First of all, a good morning to you, Laurie.
Morning, Dave.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm very good. I'm sheltering from the wind. Are you okay?
I'm very well, thank you. You were at the unveiling of Ryan Giggs as Wales boss. It's a privilege to manage your national team. it seems kind of strange that someone with very little managerial experience will get such a high profile job to me, Laurie.
Yeah, I can see your point there, Dave. The only thing I'd say is that I think Wales have had a good record with giving managers that perhaps haven't had extensive experience a chance. Obviously, Mark Hughes was given the role straight off the bat whilst he was still playing, I think, and he did really well. I was talking to Euro 2004. Chris Coleman was at a low ebb when they appointed him. His managerial career had sort of been on the wane since his glory days at Fulham. And again, he did brilliantly, the best Welsh manager in history, you'd say, taking them to the Euros semi-final. So I think in this sense, I can see why Wales would give a person like Ryan Giggs a chance here. I mean, he's done four games as caretaker manager at Manchester United and 2 years as an assistant. So I think he has done a fair amount there. And also when you look at the other candidates that they interviewed, Craig Bellamy doesn't have any managerial experience, although he's doing really good work at Cardiff, coaching their under-18s, he's doing his badges. Austin Roberts was assistant to Chris Coleman, and again, very well respected, but again, not a number one as such. And then Mark Bowen, who was Mark Hughes' number two, and had just left Stoke. So I think in terms of the pool that they had, I personally think Ryan Giggs is the best choice.
Yeah, the negative with Giggs, Derek, is that he often treated his call-ups with disdain, particularly when he was called up for friendlies, didn't turn up for international duty for some of those matches. And the Wales faithful will remember that, Derek.
Yeah, but this week he said he'd only take charge for the serious games and not the friendly, so it should be OK. I mean, you know, I do how Giggs will be. I mean, I think managing an international team, it doesn't strike me as a full-time job. I think he'll be a good manager. I think he's had the training at Man United, and he's a figurehead as well, isn't he? You know, his name is known throughout the world, and he could be the worst coach in the world, but at least he'll inspire the players in a certain way. You know, he's been there at the highest level and done it, and I don't care if he didn't turn up for the friendlies, to be honest. I mean, would you, if you're challenging for Champions League with Man United and the Premier League with Man United, turn up for a friendly with Liechtenstein? I don't even think if you played for Liechtenstein, you'd turn up for that. So, no, that doesn't bother me in the slightest. It might bother some Wales fans, some diehard Wales fans, but I think he's probably the best man for the job. Not that there's loads of candidates.
And Laurie, with Gareth Bale being, well, he should be at the peak of his powers now, Ryan Giggs was almost the Gareth Bale of his generation. Do you think those two working together might bring out the best in Bale?
You'd hope so. I mean, it was an interesting one. He was actually asked on Monday about how his relationship with Bale might unfold, given the fact that Bale's had a few muscle injuries. And as you say, he should be at the peak of his powers, but he's kind of had a bit of a stutter in 18 months at Real Madrid. And for Wales, he's as good as he was in the qualification process for the last Euros and then also the finals. He didn't really repeat that in the World Cup qualifying campaign. So Giggs, I think, will probably speak to him a little bit about maybe can he do something differently with his training regime. You know, obviously he took up yoga, didn't he, Giggs, to prolong his career as well as sort of skipping certain friendlies. And I think I do think that you'd hope that have strike up a rapport in terms of the level that they've been playing at, because, you know, if anyone's going to understand Bale, the pressure that he's under at Real Madrid and the kind of elite football that he's playing, then that's going to be Ryan Giggs.
We'll talk about the transfer market now, given that we are deep into January and things developing as we speak here on the podcast. It looks as if Alexis Sanchez, Derek, is going to end up at Manchester United after this transfer window. He's 1-10 at time of recording here with William Hill to be a Manchester United player by the end of the window. 9-2 for him to stay at Arsenal, Chelsea 8-1 to get him, Man City 12-1, and it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. I just want this to be over now, Derek. It's an ongoing saga, and it's going to be in Sanchez's best interest if he leaves, and I think Arsenal's best interest if they manage to snare Henrik Mkhitaryan as a make-weight in this deal, because Mkhitaryan wants to play for Arsenal, and I think he'd be a reasonably decent signing for the Gunners as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not going to replace Sanchez. Sanchez is a far better player than Mkhitaryan. Sanchez said Arsenal don't match his ambition being to be paid £500,000 a week. Guess what? It's mine too. I mean, that's more than I give to William Hill on a weekly basis, that. It leaves a sour taste, £500,000 a week. 99% of footballers, and each one of them, give the rest a bad name when it comes to these transfers. 500K a week is just, you know what? It defies belief, doesn't it? Is he worth it? Is he balls? He's a great player, but no player is worth that. People saying he's the highest paid player in the world. He's the highest paid anything in the world on that kind of dough. You could buy chili with that. Maybe even two bowls. I just don't understand the figures that have. And it's ultimately it's us, isn't it? It's us punters who fought the bill. It's just not. It just leaves a sour taste. Every bit of this transfer is leaving a sour taste.
Sanchez is going to end up at Manchester United, you think, Laurie? I think the interesting thing about this deal is that Manchester City have pulled out at the very last moment, and it's been down to the financial implications of the deal, which is kind of surprising, because if you think they are going to go in for someone of Sanchez's quality in the summer, they're going to have to pay in excess of £100 million for a player of Sanchez's quality.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder if the money thing's maybe a little bit of a red herring, ultimately, given the fact that they did want him last summer, and it would have, you know, cost a kind of similar kind of sums. Whether their sort of ideas have changed, given the way they've you know done so remarkably well in the Premier League, and maybe Pep thinks that his squad needs strengthening elsewhere. I'm not sure. I think also there's the kind of rivalry United. So you know they were very clear that they weren't going to compete in a certain way, you know, and kind of maybe throwing a little bit of shade on the way that United go about their business right now, which is they have to spend a little bit more to get certain players. But then I think the suggestion that, you know, Sanchez isn't going to a club that's got, you know, untold history and aspirations of winning various trophies is a little bit, reducive. So, I guess maybe they see that they need something elsewhere, maybe the defence, maybe a move for Johnny Evans could be on the cards, and they think we'll put the money there instead. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and other interesting deals that have gone through this week. Theo Walcott to Everton's an interesting one. He spent 12 years at Arsenal, scored over 100 goals for the club as well. Do you see Walcott being a success under Sam Allardyce? That would be my reservation.
Yeah, I see what you mean. That Everton team was crying out for pace, so at least they've done something to rectify that. I think Theo's probably been, a little bit sheltered at Arsenal. He's perhaps been in his comfort zone a little bit in the last sort of couple of years, and obviously hasn't been playing as much as he'd like to. So you'd hope that a move to Everton where, you know, he is going to play much more frequently, given and be given the mantle of having to do the business, he'd respond to that. I think Allardyce has had, you know, flair plays in the past, although mainly they were sort of, they still did the hard work, so... You know, I imagine that he's going to get Walcott doing lots of running, to subscribe to the work effort that he puts into his teams. But he should really be perfect for Everton in terms of stretching their team a bit more, because at the moment with Rooney, Sigurdsson, Calvert-Lewin's been leading the line on his own. He's got a bit of pace, but you know he's a young player and he's been showing he's tired in recent weeks, I think. So Walcott really is just what they need, I think.
Any other deals caught your eye, Derek?
Well, I can't believe the Chelsea are linked with Andy Carroll. The Chelsea story refuses to go away. For West Ham, Carroll is the striker who refuses to go away. I just can't believe they're interested in him. West Ham won countenance alone deal, and I find that incredible. They actually believe someone will buy him. I mean, he failed. He failed at Liverpool. He failed largely at West Ham. Didn't pull off too many trees in my eyes at Newcastle. He's not Premier League quality. He's certainly not Chelsea quality. And it's fair to say that Antonio Conte's lost the plot if he's interested in buying that plotter.
It's strange, that one, isn't it? Because when Liverpool paid in excess of £40 million for him, they were largely derided for that deal. He's older now, and the sum's being bandied about a £30 million, Derek, for Andy Carroll.
It's just absolute madness. I mean, you have to take into account the inflation in the transfer market, which is, you know, crazy. But, I'm not a professional. I've never been a professional footballer, but I've watched enough football to know the guy hasn't got it. I cannot understand why so many big clubs are interested in him. It's actually a bit depressing. It's like he gives you another option, lump it up to the big man.
haven't we come further than that in Premier League football now? I mean, you know, it's actually depressing. If he goes to Chelsea,
My name's Pete Farries, and it's time we brought this run of bad luck, or maybe just bad naps, to an end. There's lots of really good bets in the Championship this weekend. You know, there is most weekends, but there is one that jumps straight out to me, and that's Sheffield United at 19-10 to beat Norwich. Norwich, of course, had the drama midweek, but went to extra time against Chelsea. It was a strong side started by Norwich boss Daniel Farke, and for me, that means that they're going to be tired, both physically and emotionally, for the visit of a very good Sheffield United side. Now, admittedly, Norwich's home form has seen just one loss in their last five games, but Derby and Wolves have won here this season. For me, Sheffield United are a gigantic price, even though they've won just one of their last five away games. You have to consider that just how much goes into a game like that Chelsea one, again, both physically and emotionally, whereas Sheffield United, of course, have had a lovely big old 8-day break after their 0-0 draw against local rivals Sheffield Wednesday. And for me, United are a massive, massive price. So it's the Blades for me at 19-10. Let's go to Gav Puszczalowski for his thoughts on League One.
My nap selection this weekend is all about a home side who midweek were involved in FA Cup action. 0-0 draw away at West Ham, taken to extra time, in which they lost by 1-0. And that will make some people shy away from Shrewsbury, but I'm backing them to get the job done 29-20. And I'm thinking Port Vale, all about this one. Port Vale, earlier this season, had a midweek clash in the FA Cup away at Yeovil. They had a player sent off after 90 minutes and drew after 90 minutes, went into extra time, had another player sent off, finished the game with 9 and lost 3-2. A mammoth trek to Yeovil to be knocked out in extra time. A few days later, they took another mammoth trip, Port Vale, all the way north to Carlisle in the league and won by 2-1. So just because the team has been involved in FA Cup action and extra time midweek does not mean that they're going to roll over and give up on a Saturday afternoon. And I think Shrewsbury will get the job done at home to Doncaster. Shrewsbury on form at home, 4 wins in 5, and don't concede many goals. There's only Bradford who have scored at Shrewsbury. 4 clean sheets in 5 games for Shrewsbury at home. And Doncaster, 2 goals in 5 away from home. So to put it bluntly, Shrewsbury don't concede many at home, and Doncaster don't score many away from home. So I think Shrewsbury are a big play for me at 29-20. That is my nap. You could also have a little dabble on Shrewsbury to win and under 2.5 goals at 11-4. Casting his beady little eye over League Two, here's Al Ross.
When Graham Wesley was appointed at Barnet, I thought the bet of the week was obviously going to be to oppose him. I remember quoting his record in first games in charge from down the years on a previous podcast. Wasn't impressive. And he's taken over the team with the worst home record in the division. In form, Lincoln are odds against. And yet, they are not the nap this week, because of any week, you'd be a fool to ignore Yeovil's price. Fifth bottom against fourth bottom when they played Chesterfield, so you'd expect the prices to be as they are. But that's not the whole picture. This game is at Hewish Park, the ground Yeovil have been so reliant on for their results this season. Their injury list is starting to subside, and yes, there's a head-turning game against Manchester United in the cup around the corner, but the form hasn't dropped because of it. They aren't great on the road, but at home, the only games in the last 8 that they haven't won were against promotion-chasing Lincoln and against Crawley, a game in which they had just 9 men for over an hour, and still only lost 2-1. And that's before we even start on Chesterfield, the worst away form in the division, 1 league win away all season, 5 straight away defeats, scoring just the once, conceding 13 in that time. Last week's win over Luton might have been one of the shocks of the season, but that was at home, and apart from a goalless draw against Colchester, also at home, they are the only points they have won in the last 7. Yeovil to win to nil at 13-5 is nice for a single, but the nap is the outright, and it's odds against. Yeovil 23-20.
Thank you to Al Ross, thank you to Pete Farries and Gav Puszczalowski, and our guest this week from the FWA, the Daily Mail's Laurie Whitwell, for his thoughts on the appointment of Ryan Giggs and the January transfer window. Thanks as ever, of course, to Derek McGovern and Andy Excel as well. But most of all, thanks to you for tuning in to the podcast. I hope you've got some pointers ahead of the football this weekend. Check out all the betting at sports.williamhill.com or on the app. We will be back for the midweek edition of The Punt on Monday. Until then, happy betting.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.